And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Maggie Dent, who was last on this program some 10 years ago. Maggie is an in-demand writer and speaker, and a regular contributor to Australian radio, TV and online parenting and education blogs and summits. She's the author of more than 10 books, several e-books, and a prolific creator of resources for parents, adolescents, teachers and early childhood educators and others who are interested in quietly improving their lives. Maggie is the author of a new book called Mothering Our Boys, a guide for mums of sons. Maggie, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Oh, thanks, Bill, and it's lovely to be back.
Yes, well, when we last spoke 10 years ago, we were discussing your fourth book, which was called Real Kids in an Unreal World. Have you seen some changes in the intervening period for our boys?
Yeah, look, sadly we have, and that's what kind of, you know, statistically I kept looking at these figures and going, oh, hang on, things aren't getting any better. And I guess as a former high school teacher who spent a lot of time with the boys disengaged, when I heard that kind of is getting worse, then I've traced the rest of it. So we now know that we have more 4 to 6-year-old little boys being suspended and expelled across Australia in the early years because, you know, once again, we've pushed formalised learning down further, and our boys have often been a little bit slower to shine in those windows. So they're struggling. We've got higher anxiety levels. We've got more ADHD and ODD diagnosis out in our world, mainly boys. More boys are going into behaviour classes. More boys are struggling with learning. And then what I'm following it, and new research is showing that years 3 to 5, that our bright boys who transition really well are disengaging. You know, they'd much prefer to be playing Minecraft or Fortnite, and they're just finding school just a struggle. And then at the other end, we have less boys transitioning into university, and those that do are failing at an increased rate of 20%. So that's just the first lot of those things without me going into any further things. Our suicide rate for men is way too high and is not changing. And I do still find those concerning things that concern good men about how is it to be a good man in our world? It's a confusing space. So I wanted to really jump in. Dads and men get being a boy a bit, but women, wow, seriously? Mm. It was more the unintentional damage that mums, particularly mums who never had, you know, brothers. So they actually have no idea that there are some significant differences in the way that boys interpret the world and navigate the world.
And if they get their guidance from the headlines and a lot of material in the papers, you'd think that really a lot of little boys are evil.
That was the other thing, that there is still a perception out there, and that's why I had to tackle women, because there is a perception that boys are inevitably bad, they're inevitably going to get into trouble, they're inevitably going to be hard work and need. And the other one which really concerned me, Bill, was the perception that if you don't punish boys severely when they're little, then they won't turn out any good. And that one, you know, my counselling rooms after I left the classroom, that was really the voices of boys and men. Some of the things that had happened to them were, look, profoundly horrendous and cruel. And quite often, the boy or the man would say, I actually still don't know what it was that I did that was wrong that I was beaten so badly for. So I wanted us to have another look that, you know, that doesn't work, and that we have it, you know, we do know that hurt men can become often from having a hurt boy, and some of them become, you know, those who hurt others. So I wanted to really tackle, you know, let's stop hurting, hitting and shaming little boys. Let's take a big message about A, recognising they're far more sensitive emotionally than we thought, and B, let's invest some gentle, warm discipline in helping our boys work out how to make better choices rather than just belting the hell out of them.
Now, you've got 4 boys, and by all accounts, wonderful boys. What actually drove you to become a boy champion?
Look, I think it's been in my life. I think, and that's what I sort of keep saying about this book, I think it's the reason I'm on the planet. So I grew up on a farm in Western Australia, and I had a difficult relationship with my mum, but my dad was my safe base. And so I spent my whole childhood as a farmer's daughter in really close proximity to my dad, helping him out in the truck, in the tractor, you know, walking around chasing sheep. And I had a I'm from a large family, but my younger brother was, you know, all the older ones were kind of leaving home. Well, he was my, you know, he was my playmate and my best mate. So I guess I do really firmly believe I downloaded bloke communication styles, because I can go out with my girlfriend sometimes for a coffee, and my face glazes over like a lot of men, because I can't trace more than one conversation, or they're dribbling something which I can't see what's the point of. What's that conversation going? You know, like, so I think you can do, that's kind of what really started to, I have an innate knack to understand the way that boys see the world. And when I became a high school teacher, I never had problems with boys in my classrooms, and people couldn't work out what the heck I was doing. Was I just feeding them chocolate frogs all the time? You know, and what it was I just wanted to be kind. I wanted to let them know I was on their side, and that if they were struggling, that it was okay, that I wasn't going to be awful to them, and together we could help them improve. And it hasn't changed, really, and that's kind of accidentally why I keep working with men only quite often. For a while I was going off, because I obviously being a resilience specialist, I love turning up when things are really bad in communities to help ignite a community recover. So I've done bushfires and floods and things. But it's the men who want me to talk to them by themselves so that I can help them understand. Because if I get to a joint seminar, you know, women listen differently and take on board things differently. So I had to really recognise this is a really valuable attribute that I have, and I wanted to make sure that I used it to the best of my ability to improve relationships. Not just, you know, it's not just about me helping boys and men become the best expression of themselves. I wanted them to nail relationships in a meaningful way, because everybody yearns to be loved. Everyone yearns to have that safe person in their life, and I think a lot of men are confused at how do you do that?
And you say at one stage in your book that you are bilingual. You can both women and men speak. What are the differences, do you think, between women speak and men speak?
Okay. Well, just a really simple thing that we can now get from the science, which is also really helpful, is that if a woman's limbic brain, that's the emotional brain, fires up about something, the next centre to fire up is the word centre. So if she's upset about something, before you know it, there's a torrent coming out. What they've found with boys and men is the limbic brain fires up, and then it goes straight down into the body centre, and then eventually, possibly 24 hours later, it can come back up and access the word centre. So when we have conflict in relationships, women want to talk it out right now and want to discipline a boy right now. In actual fact, you give them a bit more time for them to process what was going on and what were they trying to do and can they see where they made a poor choice. The communication around that incident is quite different. And it's one of the reasons I found that men are quite often defensive in their relationships. Like, they always assume, what have I done wrong now? You know, because so often as little boys, they just were made to feel that everything they did was wrong because it didn't agree with, you know, whatever mum wanted. Or because they couldn't express what their need was, then their need became less important. And that was one of the things I talk a lot about how we need to understand quite often boys' behaviour is their language, that a boy is trying to communicate with us. And sometimes our coaching around that, like a little boy, and this happens so often when I say this in a seminar, everyone's almost had this experience. A little boy runs up to farewell his best little mate that he's played with all day, maybe as a 4, 5, or 6-year-old, and he's so excited, you know, he's trying to say goodbye, and he quite often punches him in the head. Now, he's not trying to hurt his friend, and so often we assume boys' intention is to hurt, when we actually, they're using their body and their body connections as a way of communicating their affection. So we need to teach that little boy how to do a really high, you know, hard high five or a bump the hip or a secret handshake, because he's not wrong. He just, in that moment, he didn't have the words, and he has used his body to show what he was, but it didn't kind of go well. And then later, we know that little boy feels really, really bad. He didn't want to hurt his friend, but how does he articulate that over the top of everything? He feels bad about himself.
Well, the real damage, I guess, can be done by mothers, and you spend a lot of time in your book discussing mother wounds. How do you check to see if there are mother wounds in boys growing up?
Yeah, and I think really want to throw in that I had 1,643 good men who responded to my survey, because I wanted to make sure that my voice just wasn't a woman making it up. I wanted to make sure that what I have heard and what men have told me was actually fairly valid, and I feel that's a pretty good survey. So I wanted to know, you know, A, what's your relationship like? So, and of course, roughly 80% have got good enough, you know, some not brilliant, but good enough relationships. 20% have brilliant relationships, and 20% nothing to do with their mother, completely estranged. So then I wanted to ask, what is the thing that you're really glad your mum did in your life that you're really grateful for, and what do you wish she hadn't done? So when you look underneath all of those things, that's when you start to sort of get a sense of that wound. And so what basically, if you are estranged from your mother, you will have a mother wound. If there are times you get really irrationally angry with the significant woman in your life, and you know, and that is, I absolutely am sure this is a link to our family violence, there's a chance that your beautiful woman has poked your mother wound the bear without even knowing it. So again, not listening to you, not understanding you, just rolling her eyes at you, or whatever was your wound with your mother can be triggered in that relationship. So remember, it's not if your mum shouts at you. I keep saying, because my boys had quite a few moments of those and they don't have mother wounds. It is a really significant wounding, and that's why I had to reassure to mothers, if your son is absolutely sure that you fiercely love him, regardless if he doesn't wear his undies and regardless if he's too loud and he's broken your couch because he's doing somersaults, if you can fiercely love him through all of those, then he will never form a mother wound. And it is that place of, was I frozen out of my mother's love? So there's two kind of sides, and that is the frozen, frigid, distant mother. And I kind of had one like that a little bit myself. And then the other side is the smother mother. So the mother who does too much for a boy and never lets him have freedom, never lets him become himself. They are the ones that tend to later on in life cause bigger problems. So if you get a little bit of either, it's not going to be a big deal. But when that's the main part of your mothering, then there's a chance that you could be struggling with this. And it's not easy for men to want to talk about it. I found in my counselling room that men were, even with a really, really difficult mother, they didn't want to be disloyal, because there is a really core decency in absolutely the vast majority of men are good, decent men, and they don't want to intentionally hurt others. But there was a, you know, I need to just, you know, they go, she did the best she could. But at some point, we need to own possibly that there's pain that's been caused that I have shoved deep inside me, and particularly the shame. And that was, you know, I write so much about that. I have many men I've worked with mental health issues or addiction issues or violence issues, that so often there's profound shaming of a little boy who really was quite innocent of most of those things, that they keep it in because, not like girls. Girls talk, chat, they talk about all their feelings, they work it through. You know, that's how they kind of get it out. Whereas men and boys often hold it because, remember the male code of being tough? Basically, if you show vulnerable feelings, you're weak. So that's another part of this big shift, I think, around gender now, that we're recognising that, hang on a minute, it's actually far more courageous for a man to own vulnerable feelings than it is to cover them up. And secondly, that our girls aren't quite so wimpy and weak as we were led to believe. So I think there's a, you know, it's a two-sided cultural shift that we've got happening around gender at the moment that I think is going to be healthy long-term, but gee, it's just a bit confusing in the middle.
The mothers are in a very responsible position, aren't they? Because it's an extremely close relationship, particularly that grows from those first years. And sometimes it's abused. I mean, you talk about smacking, which I've always had a personal thing against. I guess it's my own upbringing. But I think that the shame and the damage done to the relationship by physically hitting a young boy is going to take a while to get over.
Oh, and I think also, Bill, we need to mention that what we're now finding is that, you know, there's quite a few papers out there about male fragility, but the whole world just kind of still think boys are tough. And until we pull that one right down and recognise, you know, all young children have got a sensitive and tender side, then we don't crush it while they're young. But also, we've got even more evidence to show that. Now, we know that babies, boys in utero die at a higher rate. They die at birth at a higher rate. They die in the first 12 months of life at a higher rate. They're much more susceptible to social stress because as they're being turned into a boy in the first 12 weeks with a massive flooding of testosterone, their brain slows down. And so when they're born, their brain is not as developed on any level as a girl. So they actually need more eye-to-eye, face-to-face tenderness than a girl in order to get the same attachment attachment. Girls, if you pick a baby girl up out of a bassinet or something, she's more likely to lock onto the face. If you pick a baby boy up, he's more likely to look past you at the light bulb or a mobile. And that's a sign of, it's just a slightly different processing. But remember, attachment is that early bonding from mums and dads and significant caregivers. So, and then boys often launch themselves off your lap, don't they, about 15 months, and are turbos wanting to explore the world because they love freedom and they love movement, which is biologically a little bit stronger in most boys than girls. But of course, parents often think, oh, they're fine. You know, they don't need lots of cuddles and hugs, where in actual fact, we've got to still find a space where we can fill that emotional need instead of just thinking they don't need it. And then over the top, we've got new research that shows that boys' digestive system is way more sensitive than girls. So they're more likely to be affected by toxic neurochemistry, chemistry that's in some of our processed foods. They're more likely to pick up things in the environment that upset them, that upset their hormones. So can you see, Ken, when you really shift that one out the road and go, all children need lots of tenderness, love and connection and one-to-one, then we can shift quite a bit of that core wounding that we didn't even know that was kind of happening because of those what we call social conditionings or perceptions that, you know, boys are tougher so you can be more firmer. And honest to goodness, Bill, I still go into early childhood settings and there every now and then I'll see an educator who is still coming from the old male code and speaking really harshly to boys who do the same thing as girls. But also a little boy was crying. He'd hurt himself on a truck. He'd knelt down on it, caught his knee, and the educator gave him just a few moments, said, that's enough, stop snivelling now. Now, if you don't stop snivelling, you're going to stand in that corner over there. And, oh my God, every fibre in my being was just, I took my great restraint not to say something very loudly, but I really wanted to know, you know, would she do, would she speak like that to a girl?
Well, you talk about the damage done by phrases that we hear every day, the man up or be a man or what's wrong with you, you know, these sorts of unconscious damaging slights at young boys can have lasting effects, can't they?
And there's a second side to that too, Bill, which sort of says that unless you're that sort of a man, you're less of a man. So, and I write that terribly sad story about the boy who almost took his life when he was 19 because he couldn't be the man his dad wanted. So his dad was an alpha male. Remember, that's what the world wants, alpha males. I don't know that that's what they used to want. They certainly don't want them now, thanks to Trump. But what we've got is, you know, this is the way you need to look and turn up in the world. You've got to be strong and you don't show emotion and you know, you're physically buff and everything. So what we were saying is our sensitive boys and our lambs, and they're, you know, they're probably in the same abundance, who don't actually like competitive sport, who really don't like getting hot and sweaty with whatever and achieving targets, who actually are more interested in maybe the arts or nature, are less valid. And I think that's the other shift that's happening now. And I'm, you know, that boy just basically said at the end, he said, I just prefer, you know, there's nothing I'm going to do to be able to be like my father. I'm not like him. And I know he's terribly disappointed in me. And when I worked with him after his suicide attempt, he said to me, you know, every day I woke up, I knew I disappointed my father. And he told me all the time, and he said, I still have a clear memory when I'm five. He took my teddy bear and my fluffy blanket off me and threw it in the fire and told me it was time to toughen up and stop being a sissy. And I look, you know, at the end of everything, we have got, I'm a fearless girl. I'm a rooster girl, part boy, and I can be quite fiercely strong. I love competitive sport. I, you know, played a high level of basketball. I love workouts. And I've got, you know, a sister who's none of those things. And it was okay for her to be that. And it was okay for me to be this. But in the boy land, we were still looking down at those boys as, yeah, no, he's not a real boy, is he? So that's kind of why I want these conversations, Bill, and why, you know, even though it's written for mums, it's so funny that how many emails I've had and messages from men who've listened to, particularly the podcast with the Conversation Hour, which was a really full hour of, oh my gosh, just realizing I was punished severely for things I didn't understand. And I now realize, wow, I was actually an innocent boy. So it's a big conversation, and I'm proud to be the catalyst that brings more love and light back into little boys' world so that we can have men who are capable of being whichever man they need to be, but with a heart that's not broken and damaged, with a heart that's responsive and respectful to themselves and others and the world they find themselves in.
And we're speaking today with Maggie Dent, who is the author of a new book called Mothering Our Boys, A Guide for Mums of Sons. Now, Maggie, you were just talking about the high energy. I spoke recently with Jake Burden, who promotes ballet for boys as a way of using that excess energy that we just talked about. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And there are more and more, one of the good trends that's shifted in the recent times with dance competitions on TV is that boys are pouring into dance because there is more of an artistic creation there. You don't have to beat someone to do it really well, but what they're doing is massively good for their body and their focus. So again, can you imagine? I do remember an interview with a ballet dancer back in the 80s and 90s about how just the abuse and the bullying he got because he'd chosen to do ballet, because he just was a wuss and a sissy and all those horrible names. And that's all the world kind of had as their map at that time. So it's kind of like changing the template with which we can, as parents particularly, navigate raising our children.
And you refer at one stage in the book to something that I identify with, which is the fact we don't have mammoths anymore.
Yes.
You actually link the loss of mammoths with men not being able to find the butter in the fridge. And I just wonder if you could explain how that is linked.
Okay. So one of the things we do know is, and this is kind of not only over years of understanding it, that when we were cavemen and cavewomen, the gender separations were very specific for survival. So men's number one job was to kill the mammoth to keep everyone else safe. So that need to be the protector and it still biologically flows in our men. But you know what? You only had one job to do, it was to kill a mammoth. So if the mammoth wasn't there, men would need to possibly kill a large source of protein, which is like a deer for dinner. And if that wasn't there, then because they've covered both those, then we had to practice killing, which we could link back to sport. But the single focus is profoundly important because they like to finish something before they go into the next, whereas women have unfinished things all over the place. And also why we can look in the fridge and find where the butter is instantly or the milk is, because we're good at sorting among all stuff. And that is one of the things that, as a mother, if you don't understand that, you're going to get frustrated with how you communicate with your son. Because you might call out to him, he's only 2 metres away, he's watching TV and say, come on, it's time for dinner, and he doesn't hear you. And then you yell at him again, and then you scream at him, and this little boy suddenly goes, oh my gosh, what's going on? Why is the woman I love more than anyone in the world suddenly screaming at me? Because he hasn't heard you because he's got single focus in another direction. And single focus is really powerful. And that's why sometimes men forget bin night. They don't do it to annoy the woman in their life. But sometimes, in their mind, they might be working on their footy tipping and forget it's Tuesday night, which is bin night. So when we understand that we can work together with our gender differences, and so lots more mums now rub their beautiful man's shoulder if he's forgotten bin night and go, hey, babe, bin night, because that kind of mammoth deer hunter, he wants to nail it and be that, but sometimes he forgets. So he's not bad. He's much more driven by single focus. And sometimes us women need the good men in our life to say, hey, babe, just chill. Stop worrying about it. 10 years away. Just relax. Just chill. Because we overthink, we overworry, and we often go too far in the future, or we're still living in the past, whereas guys, single focus, tend to be in that one room in the house where we're in everything.
There's a world of insight and great tips for raising boys in the best way possible so that they, and boy, we need it at the moment. So I thoroughly recommend the new book by Maggie Dent, Mothering Our Boys. Maggie, we've reached the stage of the program where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you picked?
Look, I had a house full of testosterone with four boys, and I was a woman who originally, could get quite stressed. So I had gone on a how do I calm myself down process, and so in that I discovered music that helped calm me. So to keep the testosterone level down in a house with five males, I burned a lot of lanolin and sandalwood, and I played a lot of Enya. And Enya or Tony O'Connor calming music was perpetually on in our house at a low level because I had read that can change the vibration in your body. So my boys have grown up with Enya, and even now when they come home as, 29 to 37-year-old, it's not home unless they've heard at least one Enya album while they're home. So this one's a goodie because it kind of, once again, it just brings back all those memories of a house full of not only my sons but all their friends eating endless loaves of toast in my kitchen, laughing and farting and having fun. So it's full of beautiful memories, and thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you.
was Shepherd Moons by Enya, and I hope that changed the vibe wherever you're listening to this. So it just remains for me now to give a big thank you to our special guest, Maggie Dent. Thank you very much for coming back on to Dads on the Air.
Oh, look, thank you very much. And to all dads out there, look, I just absolutely celebrate how you can be a dad today, and I'm really proud to be a supporter of all of you, because I've never met a dad who wants to be a lousy dad. So well done. And one dad did say to me, the best thing I do is I have 3-minute short videos on my YouTube channel, so when he mucks up and he's looking for something because he doesn't read parenting books, he just goes and watches that. So keep that in the back of your mind. It's completely free.
Well, that's great advice again, and don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.